Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. Dominican preacher and poet Father Paul Murray brings us part one in a series of reflections by the title of The Task of Happiness.
There is no doubt about it. We all want to be happy. This simple statement of fact, these honest, ordinary words, occur in a passage written centuries ago by St. Augustine of Hippo. But so resonant and so fresh are Augustine's words, they might almost have been written today or yesterday. Augustine himself was well aware of their likely impact. His full statement regarding the task of happiness reads,
"There's no doubt about it. We all want to be happy. Everyone will agree with me, even before the words are out of my mouth. So let's see if we can find the best way to achieve it."
Within the Christian tradition, such an unembarrassed desire for happiness was not something peculiar to St. Augustine. The statement strikes a note or a chord that was in fact common in the early church. In the Shepherd of Hermas, for example, one of the most ancient Christian texts, we read, "Cleanse yourself of this evil sadness, and you will live for God. All those will live for God who banish sadness far from them and are reclothed in joy." Joy, a sharing in the mysterious joy of God Himself, is at the very heart of the gospel message. "All this I tell you," Jesus said to his disciples in John's Gospel. "All this I tell you, so that my joy may be yours, and your joy may be complete." Blaise Pascal, the French philosopher, was overheard to remark on one occasion, "Nobody is as happy as a real Christian." The statement is encouraging, certainly, but its validity stands or falls by that small word, real. For how many of us, in practice, attain the happiness of which Pascal speaks? The German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, no friend to the Christian gospel, but well aware all the same of its most important claims, remarked once on the impact of Christ on human history. "His disciples," he said, "should look more redeemed." And on another occasion, addressing directly those followers of Christ among his own contemporaries, who appeared to him rather glum and joyless, Nietzsche remarked, "It's not your arguments that tell against you, it's your faces." Obviously, it would be unwise to avoid the challenge contained in this statement. But that does not mean we must encourage as normative for believers, or make somehow compulsory a sort of willful, backslapping heartiness. There are few things, I suspect, more depressing for the human spirit or more harmful for human relations than a commandment which insists that all of us turn up to work or arrive down to the breakfast table wearing the same bland smiles, the same jolly faces every day. I feel an enormous sympathy, therefore, for a young girl called Rachel, whose letter home from summer camp I read a few years ago. Rachel, a normally robust 9-year-old, had survived about a week of camp life before she wrote home to her parents.
"Dear Mummy and Daddy, please come at once and take me home. I can't stand it here. The grown-ups, the leaders, are really strange. They force us children to be happy all the time, night and day. It's weird, honestly. They all act like the Teletubbies."
Rachel's holiday camp with its mad insistence that everyone in the camp should strain to be happy, or at least appear to be happy all the time, sounds not unlike the rather panicky, high-tech, pleasure-driven civilization we all live in today, whether we find ourselves living and working in the big city or not. If St. Augustine from the 4th century were somehow able to drop in on our third millennium and walk down the thoroughfare of one of our main cities, what would he think of us, I wonder? No doubt he would be stunned by the many advances we have made with the help of modern science and technology. But he also would be struck, I suspect, by the surprising lack of progress we have made after so many years in distinguishing between a superficial or illusory happiness and what makes for real joy. Given St. Augustine's own dramatic history as a young man, and in particular his early addiction to sex, the modern city might well remind him of Carthage, that amazing city in which, he tells us himself, he lived for some time before his conversion. Augustine writes in the Confessions,
"I went to Carthage, where I found myself in the midst of a hissing cauldron of lust.
In Carthage, there was pleasure to be sought and had, pleasure in abundance, but there was no true joy. And somehow, gradually, even the pleasure itself that the young Augustine so desperately sought was piece by piece undermined or whittled away." Augustine himself wrote later,
"In the midst of my joy, I was caught up in the coils of trouble, for I was lashed with the cruel, fiery rods of jealousy and suspicion, fear, anger, and quarrels."
It was only, in fact, after Augustine's conversion some years later that he came fully to understand the nature of happiness and how he might attain it. At that point in his life, he wrote,
"There's a world of difference between the joy of hope that comes from faith and the shallow happiness that I was looking for."
Today, we find this shallow happiness so painted over and glamorized by the media in films, magazines, and advertising, it gives the impression of a world of almost magical human fulfillment and self-realization. Pope Paul VI, in his apostolic exhortation on Christian joy, Gaudete in Domino, notes that a commercial, hedonistic, and materialistic civilization is still trying to present itself as the gateway to the future.
"We are happy to enter into your homes with joy and satisfaction."
But fortunately, many young people today, perhaps because they are the first to feel the side effects of this false dream, the hurt and the betrayal, also are the first to begin to see through all the tinsel and glamour. For sooner or later, there is what Paul VI calls an instinctive reaction of many young people against this illusion. This generation, the Pope declares, and his words today still retain all their force and authority. This generation is waiting for something else. It is my own hope in these talks on the task of happiness, a somewhat ambitious hope, I admit, to try to communicate something of what that something else might be.
And warm thanks there go to our Dominican preacher and poet, Father Paul Murray, who brought us the first of his reflections by the title of The Task of Happiness. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.